You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In 1975, at the height of the American Indian Movement, two FBI agents were shot dead during a conflict on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. Of the three AIM members tried for the murders, only one, Leonard Peltier, was found guilty, and he was sentenced to two concurrent life sentences. Today, some 36 years later, people around the world, including Archbishop Desmond Tutu, Nelson Mandela, the Dalai Lama, and 55 members of Congress, argue that Mr. Peltier is innocent, and they're calling for his immediate release. Tomorrow night at the Beacon Theater, Harry Belafonte and Pete Seeger will host a diverse group of musicians, social activists, and members of the Native American community who'll speak and perform to raise awareness of Leonard Peltier's ordeal. Harry Belafonte and fellow Peltier supporter, activist, and actor Peter Coyote join me now to talk about it. Welcome back to our show.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks so much.
Harry, the movement to free Leonard Peltier has been around for many years. Has anyone in government been listening?
Well, I tell you something. Everybody in government has been approached. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite sure that they're aware of his the story and the condition. But it is, I think that Leonard Peltier for me represents a genuine political prisoner who was in prison under political circumstances for political reasons. And he was given a life sentence. Not just the names that you've already listed, like Desmond Tutu and Archbishop Tutu and Nelson Mandela and others, but even those who were involved in the process, prosecutors and attorneys and people who, judges that have been sitting over this case for well over a quarter of a century, have all come to the place now as determinants in the case that he is innocent. And even they have not been able to move the FBI and to move the government from its position in keeping him.
So why this?
Can I just add a little something to that? The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals Judge Heaney, who upheld the appeal against Leonard, felt he had to, personally wrote a letter to President Clinton asking for clemency and holding the FBI culpable in this incident.
And would Clinton have resisted because he didn't want to go against the FBI?
What I'm told is I was involved in that clemency appeal, and we won the Clinton's lawyer, and he said, now write the speech for the president. And what we were told was that Tom Daschle was in a very close race with a Republican, and he told Clinton that if you want a Republican senator, free Peltier. But that's apocryphal. I don't know that for a fact.
Well, can you take us through what happened that day? In 1975?
Well,
how familiar are you with the case?
I'm very. I've known Leonard since before he went to jail. I met Leonard in 1969 when he was accompanying a fellow named Robert Free, who I've known since he was 14, accompanying the spiritual elders around the country. And they were buying weapons for Wounded Knee, and I was helping them with that. And several years later, I read about Leonard being in jail, and I didn't know him. I'd met him under another name. And I sent him $50 commissary money so he'd have a little change in prison. And he wrote me back, hey, I used to know a guy named Coyote with a dog and a truck, and we ran around for weeks. So I jumped on the bandwagon again then. So here's the short story. 1973, the highest per capita murder rate in the United States was the Sioux Reservation. The people being killed were democracy activists. They were trying to overthrow Dick Wilson, the tribal chief of police, who was being supported by the FBI. The traditional women requested the American Indian Movement warriors to come help them. They came and they set up a camp on the Jumping Bull Ranch. One day, in this climate of fear and violence, two guys come in the reservation on an unmarked car and pull long guns out of the trunk. No one knew they were FBI agents. Their excuse was that they were following a kid who'd stolen two cowboy boots, hardly a federal charge. They had 50 tribal police staffed just off the farm, and most people suspect that it was a diversion because the tribal police chief was in Washington illegally signing away the uranium mining rights. A firefight broke out. The tribal police fled. The two agents were wounded and then finished off by a man who's come forward and admitted it. Said, we were at war, I don't have any remorse, and I don't feel I should turn myself in. When the bodies were discovered and they found out they were FBI agents, the leadership was told to go, and they went. And what happened next was that the National Guard and the FBI took over the reservation. 100,000 rounds were fired. Old people were stripped and beaten. Houses were demolished. They captured three guys and charged them. Leonard was not one of them. They were acquitted by an all-white jury who held the FBI culpable. The FBI then set out and closed every loophole in the case. And in the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, it said they suborned witnesses, they broke evidentiary chains, they filed false affidavits, 9 or 10 errors. And that's when the judge, who said, I had to uphold the conviction, but he wrote to President Clinton and asked for. So basically, for 37 years, this man, who's had a pig service of a trial, has stayed in prison, and the prosecutor has admitted they have no idea whether he was guilty or not.
And, Harry, what evidence did the FBI present in their case against Leonard Peltier?
I'm not too sure of the details of all the things that were presented, but I do know that I'd like to make another assumption. Let's assume that there was an incident and these FBI agents were killed. 37 years in prison for a crime, when you have been a prison, a model prisoner, and you have been using your time in that prison to make poetry, to make culture, to write things, to do things, to guide young prisoners coming into to another level of life, has been exemplary behavior by Peltier. And I think that our humanity should be at stake in making considerations for what to be done with him. The legal course has been combed and recombed and gone over 1,000 times. It's just an intransient situation with the FBI, and they're not going to yield.
Well, the American Indian Movement was a headline story in the 1970s. Do you think it's become one of the forgotten stories of recent history?
No question about it. Matter of fact, the Native American community cyclically in this country is always subject to the great American amnesia. We continue to recognize that something has been done that's terrible to the indigenous, and at the same time we've done nothing to rectify or to make a difference. And it seems to me that we have long since burnt up all of our choices. The only appeal that we have left is really Barack Obama, and the president himself must step in and intervene. And that's what we're trying to do, is to get a consciousness raising going among citizens.
And that's why this concert?
That's right.
Well, Peter, you mentioned that a number of Native Americans were killed. Has anyone been prosecuted for the killing of them?
No. Those cases were never investigated. I'm embarrassed that I'm so old I can't remember the name of the young Indian boy who was shot through the forehead by a sniper during that firefight. His death was never investigated. Several witnesses died in FBI custody, and several people were murdered, and those deaths were just written off.
Now, you said earlier that Leonard Peltier is a political prisoner. Is that because COINTELPRO plays a role in all of this?
Well, let me give you this example. In 1996, I was asked to be a delegate to the convention, the Democratic Convention. And I agreed to do that to win them face time. You know, the cameras like celebrities, so I would go and help the Democrats. But in return, I asked an introduction to deputy level or higher in the Justice Department. And I met someone. I gave him the same story I gave to you. He said, I'll have to get back to you. He called me 2 days later, and he said, I'm embarrassed to admit to you that when you spoke to me, I thought you were a wild-eyed radical. Everything you told me is true, and all I'm permitted to tell you is that there are some very, very powerful people in Washington who don't want Mr. Peltier out. And I said, are their initials WW, meaning William Webster? And he said, well, you said that. So I know, as Harry knows, it's political.
So J. Edgar Hoover initially, and then why William Webster?
You know, two FBI agents were killed. That's a tragedy. No one's making light of that. we could say they should never have come in unannounced. They should not have been there, but they were.
They should not have misrepresented themselves. I'm quite sure if everybody knew who they were when they came in, and they weren't assigned to doing something clandestine, that's a choice they made.
But the point here is also that Leonard Peltier there's been no evidence presented he was the killer. And you say somebody else has admitted. Has he been sent to jail?
No, he's not turning himself in. He's an AIM warrior. He said, we were at war. There was evidence submitted, but it was all proved false. The rifle that supposedly belonged to Leonard, that supposedly fired the death shots, turned out not to have been the rifle that killed the agents, turned out not to be Leonard's rifle. There was all sorts of suppressed and violated evidence.
Harry, the FBI infiltration of the Black Panthers is well documented. So is its involvement in the death of Panther leader Fred Hampton. Did the FBI conduct similar operations with the American Indian Movement? Was there a COINTELPRO?
Yes. I don't think there is a movement by any peoples who are suffering under the systems of oppression that have not been infiltrated, have not been undermined, have not been under heavy government supervision and scrutiny. I'll tell you this, that I supported the American Indian, I still do, and worked with Bill Kunstler, who was an attorney for a lot of the leaders in the Indian movement, and with leaders. There was a sweep that took place at the time that Pelletier was caught up in all of this with the American, with the rebellion on the reservation. And most of the charges against these leaders, which were filed in different courts under different systems, were trumped-up charges. And in the cases where I was directly involved with Dennis Banks and with Russell Means and Bill Kunstler, that case lasted in court for 11 months. And at the end of it, the judges threw the case out because through the course of the investigation, we found the FBI eavesdropping. As a matter of fact, they had taken the head of the American Indian Movement, who was the head of security, a Native American, who was supposedly taking care of protecting the interests of the victims, and he turned out to be an informer. And we didn't find out until 2 years after the cases were over when information was released that sitting in the trial in the rooms for the people who were being charged, all the strategies that were being discussed was being taken by the security agent, AIM security agent, back to the FBI. And Bill Kunstler discovered agents in the room who were making notations and taking pictures and doing things where they was clearly they were off base. So this act of COINTELPRO and investigation and the sweep through the leadership of the American Indian Movement is well documented.
But the FBI has admitted to having engage in activities that it no longer would engage in.
Yes.
Are they still holding firm in this case?
Yes, they are.
My guests are Harry Belafonte and Peter Coyote. There's going to be a concert and other activities at the Beacon Theater on the Upper West Side of Broadway, right across the street from Fairway, on this Friday at 7:30, called Bring Leonard Peltier Home in 2012. We recently had Jamie Fellner here from Human Rights Watch, and then the New York Times has written editorials on this, saying that even when people have committed murders, they are the least likely to commit a crime again of all people who've been convicted, and yet they are kept in jail the longest because the alternative, I guess, is the death penalty. But Leonard Peltier has been in prison, you said, how many years?
37 years. So let's turn it around, Leonard. Let's say this way. I was not there. Harry was not there. I can't swear on my children's life that Leonard is innocent. But I can ask this question. If he was guilty, how come there was no evidence? And how come the government had to resort to at least 10 and perhaps more admissible errors to convict him? And what does it say about our system of justice when a citizen can be put to jail without due process and held for 37 years.
Also, 800 documents were not allowed into the trial,
I
gather.
That's a whole other story.
I think Peter's put it well because nobody dismisses the fact that it was a great tragedy that two persons lost their lives in an incident that should never have existed. So we're not dismissing that great tragedy and that there should be justice. But when you have the circumstances that have been charged against Pelletier turn out to be so false, turn out to be so misleading, at what point does a superior force or a superior moment step to the table and say, this is immoral, this is unacceptable to the justice system in America? And I think the plea that we're talking about right now is, where is our humanity? And what does it say about a justice system with a person like Barack Obama, who's come to office under the promise of so much to relook at all the ills that face us as a country and some of the decisions we've made on what to do with policy, to change those policies? And a lot of us feel that Pelletier is one of the first examples of what the president could do in stepping in to say that we have one of the best justice systems in the world in terms of its design. Its practice is hugely flawed when it comes to people in struggle, and we really have to turn that around. And a lot of people feel that Barack Obama is, by all measure, the person most likely to be the one that should do that.
Well, last month, Damian Nichols visited our show. Mm-hmm. As you know, he was part of the West Memphis Three and recently released from death row following a series of HBO documentaries that questioned that guilty verdict. What do you think films about Leonard Peltier haven't had a similar impact?
Well, one reason is there haven't been many. Leonard...
He has an important first name, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, it is. It is. It's immortalized. You know, just closer to home, right? My friend and companion in work, Ken Burns, made a film about the Central Park Five, New York City. Five young black brothers spent a sizable portion of their lives in prison as a result of corrupt prosecution and overzealous prosecution.
And I want to tell you something. We talked about that film a couple of weeks ago. And I got an angry note from somebody who reports for the Daily News saying, how dare you do that? Those kids were guilty. There are some people who will, doesn't matter what you say, no matter how much evidence you present, who will always believe that the person who was convicted is guilty.
Well, it's hard to fix stupid. However, when the courts finally throw the case out and they've reviewed it and adjudicated it, that's good enough for me. So we know that there's been evidence for many, many years of corrupt, overzealous prosecutions. Prosecutors forgetting their oath to ensure that justice is done and wanting to win. And so Mr. Peltier is a victim of that. And we as citizens are called to call our government to task and say, that's not the rules. I'm doing the same fight about warrantless wiretaps, the removal of habeas corpus. You know, we have a system, as Harry said, that's the most elegantly designed justice system. I want to see it put into practice.
Have either of you met with Leonard Peltier while he's in prison?
I have. Yeah.
How is he holding up?
Not so well.
Not so well. He's really quite ill. And as a matter of fact, that's another condition that we're looking at. He's not expected to live very much longer.
He has diabetes. They've moved him. I saw him when he was in Kansas. They've moved him to Florida. He's far away from his family and relatives. No one can see him. His jaw was wired shut for a year. Hmm. He survived two attempts on his life in prison by, you know, guys supposedly working to get their sentences alleviated. He's had a miserable life, and yet he's never stopped painting, drawing, writing poems, supporting people, lifting the consciousness of his people. He is the Nelson Mandela of the Native movement.
He said he wrote an open letter to Barack Obama in 2008. Do we know whether the then candidate, I guess, received it?
We don't know, but we do know that in the papers every day, Hillary Clinton is attacking the Russians on their human rights. We're making human rights an issue around the world. And those people have at their fingertips the Leonard Peltier case. There was a petition from Russia about 10 years ago that had 16 million names attached. So why don't we just clean up our house? Geronimo Pratt is out of jail. There are not so many. But Leonard is a universal example of a miscarriage of justice. And every time we speak to the Chinese or the Russians or the Syrians or the Egyptians, they turn right around and they have that at their fingertips.
So who's going to appear at this this performance, Bring Leonard Peltier Home, in 2012 at the Beacon, the Beacon on Friday? Harry, you and Pete Seeger are the hosts.
Myself, Pete Seeger. Peter's also one of the hosts.
Jackson Brown will be there.
Performing, I'm assuming.
Yes. I've got a note from Susan Sarandon, who's trying to make it. She's doing some adjustments to her schedule. The fellow who actually knows the entire lineup is named Jack McGee, and I haven't yet conferred with him about all the people that'll be there. But they'll be
banned. We have strong representation from the rap community. We have Common, who's coming. As a matter of fact, he's a hefty part of the evening, and so is Mos Def.
And you'll be incorporating.
Rappers are coming to lend their support to this moment.
Well, non-musicians like somebody who understands this kind of case intimately, Reuben Hurricane Carter.
Yes, yeah. Reuben Hurricane Carter, who went through that very same miscarriage of justice system, came out, and he's very much a part of this because he's working on getting these kinds of cases fixed.
Were you worried because this comes so soon after Hurricane Sandy that the 12-12-12 concert might have overshadowed your effort here?
That's quite possible. That it would be silly not to suspect that that would be the case. But we're still going to do what we have to do and continue to do it. This is the first of a startup of a series of things we would like to do around the country to get this consciousness going on getting Peltier released.
Now,
hopefully before the major last time, moments of his life would be spared before he passes away.
Should it's I assume that both of you have FBI files?
Oh, yeah. You can be sure.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned the 12-12-12. I think it's a testimonial to Leonard that when we were beginning this event, it was going to be a benefit concert, and he nixed it. He said the people of New York and New Jersey have already been tapped out and ruined by this storm. I don't want to ask a nickel from them.
That's right.
But if they would just help bring my case forward. Right? So there's a fellow in prison after 37 years, and he's thinking about other people.
Yep, that's Leonard.
What did you discover about I'm sure you looked at your files to find out why the FBI had even been following you. What did you discover?
I discovered that, for me personally, it was a time of great fear in America. McCarthyism was rampant. It was the end of the Second World War. The Cold War had moved in very fiercely. And anything progressive, anything that talked about liberation for Africa or Latin America, wherever we were in the world, was considered a tool of the Russians and a tool of communist propaganda. And all truth was just subverted with that preponderance of the miscarriage of truth by institutions within the government and the private sector, the military-industrial complex, COINTELPRO, all of it, which just wanted to crush the voice of dissent, which just didn't want free speech to be heard. And with myself and other artists who had had the platform, was using it to speak out against these issues, we fell under great scrutiny. And advertising agencies were instructed not to hire us. We were blacklisted from performing in a lot of television and doing a lot of things. Paul Robeson was one of the great victims of that period when artists were not permitted to perform.
And Paul Robeson Jr. Was on the show years ago, mm-hmm. talked about going through his father's FBI file and discovering that some of his father's best friends had been reporting on him to the FBI. It really, he said, it kind of like made them feel like nobody was safe. No private conversation was really private.
Nobody was. I think that one of the great problems with that kind of insidious undermining of organizations and institutions whose purposes are noble, excuse the endowment, but who are really noble, the effort to quell that voice has now gone to another paradigm. When you can sit down and see this same crazed group talking about socialism and Barack Obama as some kind of a tool of Islam, and I mean the extremes to which they'll go are unlimited. And needless to say that when it comes to the FBI, I mean it destroyed my marriage, my first marriage. They came and interrogated my wife. Just had her so smitten with fear that she just said, you know, if you don't get out of the movement, this marriage is going to end. And I could not make that choice. So it goes deeper than just what's on the surface of are they tapping you or not tapping. It's the consequence that it has for families and people and communities.
Peter, do you think the FBI is given up on you now?
Oh, I'm so old, I don't think I represent much of a threat. But my cousin Irving Adler was the first public school teacher fired for being a communist. And his revenge was 28 years later suing them for back salary and winning. My family was we had a lot of blacklisted friends. Arthur Bernkranz, Albert Decker could not get work as an actor in New York. It was a Norman Thomas was washing poodles. It was shameful. And it's actually no better today.
The first film that I did as an independent producer, Odds Against Tomorrow, had Abraham Polanski as the writer, and we couldn't declare that. I liked the subversion of it because it was like guerrilla war. You may think you stopped us, but we're going to come up wherever we want to be. But for a long time, it wasn't until just 3 years ago that the Guild moved to have all references to who it was that wrote it turn out to be Abraham Polanski. It was a nightmare, and still is, incidentally.
Among the other people appearing, Peter Matheson will be speaking. Mm-hmm. Bruce Coburn will be performing, along with Margot Thunderbird. For ticket information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. It takes place at the Beacon Theater this coming Friday at... which is tomorrow.
7:30. That's right.
At 7:30. And my great thanks to Harry Belafonte and Peter Coyote for being on our show today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us, Leonard.